This is William Del Pilar with my co-host Eddie Aparicio, and this is Points on the Board, episode 56 for those who like the technicality. All righty, Eddie, how you doing, brother?
All good, man. I just had one of those weekends, though, man. That's, you know, I told you earlier I was going to be slammed, and you know, I was hoping I'd have enough time to do all the research that's needed for these podcasts, but man, I was slammed. I had two golf tournaments. And then I also went to the Stanford Cardinal UCLA game on Saturday night. And, you know, that was a butt kicking big time by UCLA over Stanford. I went with my brother-in-law, who's a UCLA alum, and went with like five of his cohorts who are all UCLA Bruin alum as well, fraternity brothers. So it was quite the event. And then Saturday morning, I had to go do the same thing all over again, play in the rain. Actually, I played golf in the rain. Freezing. As soon as I was done, I came back. I had to warm myself up under the covers, watching TV, fell asleep because I was thrashed. I was so wet, man. And you know, of course, you can't hit the ball when it's wet. My gloves are completely soaked. So I normally hit the ball like 320 yards, honestly. And I was hitting probably like 215, 220 at my best. That's how bad it was. So that's the reason I was slammed, man. How about you? How was your weekend, man?
Well, first of all, Eddie, you just 90% of our audience is going, slam? Is he talking about being slammed? I thought he was going to talk about work. That's nothing but fun he had all weekend.
That's golly. Fun slam, though. That's fun slam. Still, it's a lot of time, right? It's a lot of time. I barely saw my family this weekend because of it.
Well, so. You know, my weekend went well. It was slammed also because we had a new podcast. It's a political podcast.
Okay.
And, I was going to say nightmare. It was not a nightmare. I lost a little bit of control with two strong egos. It was three of us. And then they started getting into the weeds. And it's my job to make sure we don't get into the weeds. All of a sudden, you know, I'm trying to find the spot so I can politely interrupt and try to get us back on track. And there's no spot. Then finally, one of the panelists jumps in and goes, "We're getting into the weeds here a little." But it was a good podcast. It's a podcast. Two good people. They're what you would call grassroots activists. So they have very strong opinions, and that's kind of what I want. And it's called Fired Up California. And with that, let me get into my spiel here that I got to get into. First of all, this is Points on the Board. You can watch our podcast on sportsgrumblings.com, which will hopefully this week become grumblingsmedia.com. But you can also watch it on YouTube and Rumble, and we are under the handle Grumblings Media there. And you can also listen to the podcast in your traditional podcast venues, Apple, Google, Spotify, and Pandora. And you'll find this podcast here. You'll find on sportsgrumblings.com, you'll find some of Eddie's clips, some of the Points on the Board clips. We parsed out some of his basketball clips here for you basketball aficionados who don't care for football. So it's a lot of good stuff. And we're still moving forward, my friends. We are still moving forward with podcasts. We have our football podcast this week, and we're going to have an NBA preview. So be on the lookout for that, where Eddie is the man. For some reason, I just thought of Chico and the Man by saying Eddie the Man. But you have a daughter. You have a daughter.
I do, man. I do. I know. She'll have no idea what Chico and the Man is. I bet half the audience would have no idea what Chico and the Man is. So look it up on Google. What Chico and the Man is, man. It's an old school show. So
Chico and the Man is arguably, I say arguably because there could have been a show before, but one of the first modern era in color in the 1970s to prominently feature a Latino in the leading role. And Chico, Freddie Prince. Was the father of Freddie Prince Jr. Now, Freddie Prince. When he talks, you can recognize he's a Latino. You know, he's very light skin. Remember, it's like I tell people, if you look at Hollywood, the minorities, they all have white features. Even going black Americans, going back to that, Harry Belafonte, Lena Horne, you see the high cheekbones, the straight nose. You don't have my mother or I on TV with our shortness or flat nose. In 10 years, this hair is going to look like a steel wool pad if you look at my mother, you know. So, but that said, it was a funny show, and Freddie Prince passed away. He shot himself. He was having some issues, and Freddie Prince Jr. actually never really got to know his father, just heard of him. He was really tight with another name from the past, Tony Orlando and Don.
Oh, yeah. That's right. 70s.
and they were best friends. Anyway, we're getting off topic from the perspective of our audience. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. So we're going to talk power rankings. We're going to talk poor refereeing. We're going to talk rush first quarterbacks. And Eddie's going to give us our fantasy football waiver wire picks. So let's not waste any time. Let's get into it, first of all, with the poor refereeing. Eddie, I don't know if you're aware, but the last 2 weeks, we've had nothing but terrible refereeing. And it helped the Steelers win against the Rams. Now, that was partially on Sean McVay. But in that Browns-Colts game, pretty much the referees gift wrapped it for the Browns win there. And then we saw some seriously controversial calls in the Eagles-Dolphins game. And I didn't see the penalties, but I guess there were issues in the Patriots-Bills game too. And it turns out the lead referee for the Dolphins-Eagles game, that crew had been suspended once for ethics and whatever that means in refereeing in an ACC game. So this is nothing new to the NFL, but let's take it. So did you see any of the games in the sense of the Colts versus the Browns, the key highlights? There was a couple of calls at the end of the game.
Guillermo, I did see some of the highlights. Unfortunately, because of my slammed weekend that I mentioned earlier, I didn't get a really chance to see all of it. But I do know that every game has its questionable calls, and these referees, man, they have a hard job. I'm not gonna, nail them to the wall too much on every game, but by and part, they do a pretty good job in general. But yeah, there are some calls that, especially game changing calls that could steer a game either way, right? And, every game has its bad calls. So, but as far as the ones that you're talking about, I didn't necessarily see those ones. So maybe you can paint the pictures of what happened if you saw it.
Well, first of all, I have no love for the refs. Screw those old bastards. And here's why. The first thing I noticed as a kid in the 1970s was seeing a ref who looked like he was in his 50s, not able to keep up with the receivers. As a child, I'm like, if he can't keep up with the receivers. So that's why they have so many refs to try to cover every angle. But these refs need to be in shape. Just like a military pilot, they must have, in my eyes, 20/20 vision. You've got to minimize all these factors. And if there's a ref from the state of one of these teams, don't let him on there. The ref who's making all these terrible calls, who has his crew has been suspended once already, he's from Pennsylvania, like 60 miles from Philadelphia. I don't care people who tell me, well, no, he can sit there and be objective. No, he can't. Or why put him in that position? Simple question. I mean, the military is great for one thing. I mean, the military is just going terrible now. Our job is to kill. Period. That's our job. Kill the enemy. No ifs, ands, or buts. So we have these beliefs, these bylaws, for lack of a better way, of how certain things are done. And you never deviate from them. Why? If we do, America could perish. The Russians found – if we had gone to war with the Russians in the 1970s, navally, they would have destroyed us because they had all our strategy. A spy had been feeding them. John Walker had been feeding them for years and years. So they made plans on how to avoid that. So that's how they need to look at this refereeing. And they need to sit there and start suspending these guys. I mean, some of these calls are blatant.
I hear you. Guillermo. So let me tell you one thing that I think would rectify some of this. And it's unfortunate that we haven't got to this point yet. But, we're getting there, I think, with replay. I think there should be opportunities for teams to go ahead and throw a flag, a challenge flag on a call. I think there should be some parameter for that. I mean, right now there isn't. It's only based on calls on the field about a certain play, but not necessarily on penalties. And I think, that would help rectify some of this is if we can go, the coaches can go ahead and throw a flag, whatever the parameters are. It could be one per game, one per half, whatever it is. And it's essentially, a way to have checks and balances on some of these calls. Because, some of these blatant calls would essentially be overturned if we were allowed to do that, if they were allowed to do this. I think that's the way to do it, honestly.
Well, I think they're getting to that. I think their fear is undermining the referees. But I'm like, I don't care about the referees.
Who cares,
I care about getting the play call right.
Yeah.
But that said, the Steelers-Rams game, the reason they couldn't overturn with a blatant bad spot. I mean, I'm a Steelers fan, and it was one of these rare calls where you actually saw the player on the outside, meaning you could see where the ball was specifically versus the big pile in the middle, you know? And he was clearly short. And Sean McVay had used up all his timeouts. So he caught the seat. So in that sense, okay, I'll let that slide. But to your point, there should be an upstairs crew that's part of the officiating crew. Hey, boss, if you look at the film, we need to look at this. This one should be reversed. It's about getting the call right, you know?
Yes.
So as far as the Dolphins and Eagles, you know, they stymied the Dolphins. Look, the Eagles were the better team last night.
For sure.
But it did not help that drives were stalled because of the referees, that the referees called back. It's like, for example, they tried to say, well, the Dolphins got the tip ball interception right after that bad pass interference call and got a TD. That is an irrelevant fact.
Right.
The fact is, they screwed up the call because they could have punched it in, and who knows, they kick off, maybe the Eagles fumble. That's what I'm going to say. The Eagles would have fumbled the next play. If you want to tell me this, or this, based on conjecture, that's my conjecture. Of course, I'm being silly. But the point is, you can never just get the play right. Then the Colts and the Browns was a killer because the Colts were playing with Gardner Minshew, you know, 1970s porn extra.
And he was moving the ball against that Browns. He was moving the ball.
Exactly, and at the end of the game, it's as if the ref says, "Oh man, my FanDuel pick ain't gonna come through." Oh hell, we got DraftKings too. Pass interference, Eddie. We are getting to that point. That's one of my biggest fears in today's games. Look at that in your favorite sport.
It happened in the NBA.
Tim Donahue.
Yeah.
That's right. And there's a Netflix special on it. So, and how he did it to show the underworld, whoever he was being paid off, how he could do it. He's like, I'm going to disrupt this game. And sure enough, he calls Allen Iverson on palming. And that's the other thing about these rules. I'm like, why have a rule if you're not going to enforce it? It's like, I get LeBron is elite. But how many points would he have if he wasn't allowed to take three steps versus two and the rest always let him? And each superstars get away with that. And what people don't realize is that also opens the door to bad refs. You know, like he said with the palming. That was technically the NBA couldn't go to him and go, why are you calling that? It's palming. It's illegal. Don't make it a rule. That's the other issue I have.
It's there. I mean, the bottom line, these guys control the tempo of the game. So there's definitely, I would say, some bad apples out there that, like a Tim Donaghy, and I'm sure there's more of them in the NBA, that documentary essentially called them out a little bit. So I think they're not necessarily as blatant now, but I'm sure it's still going on. The NFL, there's no recourse right now for the NFL refs for doing anything. And I'm sure that there are guys out there that do something like what Tim Donaghy did. It's just they haven't been checked yet.
Exactly. And you know what? I will not be surprised by the first controversy because I believe this will happen. It's an eventuality. It's part of our DNA, our human nature. And there's bad characters out there and there's good characters out there. And when it blows up, I'm going to be happy because that's what it's going to take to make these changes. You know, it's like they hammered the hell out of the players, but it's as if they don't even look at the referees.
I hear you, and I think that's a solution, but it remains to be seen if the NFL ever do anything about it. I think they should. I think there's a case for it, and I think that the commissioner should take a good hard look at it because that's the direction that we're going with this replay. It's just if we're not there to maintain the feelings of the refs. It's to maintain the integrity of the game, not the integrity of the refs. So I think they need to do that eventually. And hopefully, our podcast and others can talk about this and, force the issue, right? It's possible, right? You never know. Right. So, right now, we're not as big as, like a Joe Rogan, but Joe Rogan, if he says it, man, it might move the needle.
Right. I guess my solution would be to have the boss from the referee crew up at top in the press box and watching the film there, and they have the power to go to not tell them I'm changing the call, but to go, you got to look at this call, And then give the power back, but to point them in the right direction. I think that's the solution, and I think that's the solution we're coming to. And I think what will cause this change are these refs now on Fox, on CBS. Not the refs playing.
Yeah, I hear you. The ones that are in the –
that are hired.
The guys that are with them are making the call, right? That's what you're talking about. Yeah.
And I think that's what's going to drive it.
Yeah, like a D-Man, you know, Mike Pereira, those types that are already, you know, in the press box with those guys. Yes, I agree.
Exactly.
Or they could be remote.
And sometimes they get it wrong, you know. They'll come back and go, my bad, you know. Or the person disagrees with them.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this, again, well, tonight's game, they made my Niners, they faltered. The reffing was actually pretty good, actually. I didn't see anything like
that. Hold that thought, because I wanted to ask you specifically about that game.
All right.
And so let's move on here. I wanted to get to rush-first quarterbacks. We talked about this, and this is a sore point with me because of the politics. Everything's become tribal. There's a lot of black or mixed quarterbacks coming to the league, whether Desmond Ridder, Anthony Richardson. And, you know, us as fantasy football players and us as Latinos with mixed relatives, we don't care, but it's a big issue. And the reason it's a big issue for me isn't with race. It's with the knowledge of these moronic fans. It's like, no, to be a quarterback, you eventually have to drop back and throw the ball strong.
And
at the end of the day, a rushing quarterback's longevity is not the same as somebody who understands the pocket or learn. So, for example, I gave two examples. The person I want to talk about is Anthony Richardson, who chose to undergo season-ending surgery, which was not a bad move because he has an AC joint injury going back to high school. That's where he got it, and it's deformed the joint, so he wants to get it taken care of. However, the setback from losing a year in an era where people have short, they don't have patience. So
this
is a big loss for him. But I wanted to bring up Steve Young because everybody still knows Steve Young, a former analyst at ESPN, Super Bowl winning champ, came out of the shadows of Joe Montana. His career ended because of concussions. And a lot of those concussions came because he was a rushing quarterback and he took a lot of hits. He still had a good 2 to 3 years left in him, but it ended it. It was concussions that took him out, but Randall Cunningham, knee injury took him out. Michael Vick, as great as he was, his own stupidity with the legal mess kind of took him out. But even then, he's a player, and I've talked about this in the past, who truly never learned how to stay in that pocket. You know, Brett Favre learned, you know, Patrick Mahomes learned. It's hard to believe he's been in the league, 6-7 years already? He still seems like a 2 or 3 year, but they learn. The great ones learn. So, and the reason I bring Anthony Richardson up is because that was my fear going into this season, because he was the most raw quarterback, and he was big guy, his legs. And as I was researching him, I was reading, you know, he'd mow down people. His junior year, the coaches held him back a year because they had no offensive line in high school, the coaching staff. So they wanted him to get bigger. Once he got bigger, he was a man amongst boys. But just try to protect yourself is what Trevor Lawrence told him. The hits add up in this league and are a little different than in college. So there's the number one overall pick telling him, look, this isn't college, is what he's saying. Michael Pittman Jr., his receiving teammate, pulled him aside and begged him to find a different way. Don't run like me, said Pittman, the team's heat-seeking missile. I like that, heat-seeking missile. It's a former sailor. I like that.
Especially
if the whole franchise depends on you. And Richardson did take that lesson to heart, and he's starting to slide. But that's something he'd never done until he got to the pros. So how much of a beatdown did he take in college? You know, and before I get the final point, what are your thoughts on my belief? Am I way off base here?
I think you're right on base. I mean, a guy that showed that you can be a really good pocket passer without really needing to run is the example that we saw tonight in Kirk Cousins. Now, you know, he had a great game, and that guy didn't even run at all throughout the game. I mean, he essentially just passed in the pocket pass. His offensive line did an awesome job in protecting, you know, what supposedly is a daunted defense by the 49ers who can rush the passer. They were not even close to Kirk Cousins, but he's an example of somebody that I think that, you know, over time, I mean, he's always been a pocket passer, but his experience is showing he's good at what he does as a pocket passer. And I think a lot of these coaches want you know, kind of like that, you know. Brock Purdy's, you know, a good pocket passer too. He runs, you know, he's still a rookie, right? I mean, you know, or second year. So, you know, he's still learning the game as far as being a good pocket passer. But, you know, the running quarterbacks in the league, you have Lamar Jackson's probably the prototypical running quarterback right now. And the guy's still – yep.
Actually, Eddie, this game that they destroyed the Detroit Lions on,
yes.
When the head coach came out, I forget the head coach's name for the Lions. He came out and said, "Look, Lamar just destroyed us to the air and ran when he had to." They're making a complete shift to a more passing offense. And that's a transition for Lamar Jackson. He's making his move to become a pocket quarterback.
He's doing it now.
And the reason they never got him past the second round, a big part of the reason is, in playoffs, you better learn to be a quarterback first and then use your legs, because eventually you will falter. There has been no rush first quarterback to win a Super Bowl. Big John, my partner, tried to tell me Jalen Hurts. And then I looked at his numbers. No, I would not have called him a rush first quarterback last year. Maybe his first year in the NFL, but there's never been a rush first quarterback. And I think Lamar Jackson can be the scariest quarterback for the next 5, 6, 7 years, because he's still young. He's still in his early 20s, I believe, you know, like 23, 24, maybe 29.
He's a little older than that. Yeah, I think he's like 27, 28 range. But, yeah, he's a beast. I mean, that guy is so fast, but his arm strength is really good too. I think he's just, you know, I think Baltimore was trying to accumulate wins. They saw that what his talent was, and that was his talent in running. And the guy was so elusive, never really took a really hard hit, you know. So I think he's still doing the same thing right now. He's just so fast, so elusive. But, you know, I think they're scaling him back from that, which is the right call. That's going to prolong his career. And I think make the Baltimore Ravens a better team long term.
Exactly. He's 26 years old. And where I will disagree with you, he has been injury prone the last few years. That's been the knock on him. And it's because of his style. And I think this new offense, you're right, will make him a scary person. Now, I want to end this with and I apologize to the author, writer of this, because I don't know who did it. But I think it was talking about Inside the Hurt, the healing and the hope in Anthony Richardson's shoulder. And I got that at MSN.com. And I want to give the author's name. His name is Nate Atkins for the Indianapolis Star. And the reason I had to go to Bean to go read it is because if I had gone to the Indianapolis site itself, it would have locked me out. You got to pay. So for people out there, you get a lot of MSN articles that are behind paywalls for free there. But this guy brought up a very good point, and I'm just going to read it. The Colts are facing the natural bind that comes with mobile quarterbacks in the NFL. Of every quarterback with at least 9,000 total yards in his first 5 years between 1998 and 2012, the 11 with the most rushing yards average 110 games played. The 11 with the least rushing yards average 163. There's a lot of nuances that aren't covered and years that aren't talked about or this or that. Right. So this could be a very deeper report. But the gist of it is what I always say. A rushing quarterback will get hurt, will miss time, will not develop. And the reason I say nuances here, also, when you get so many injuries, how good a quarterback are you versus before the injuries? How many of these rushing quarterbacks lost their ability to work their magic and just couldn't even make it to the playoffs or to the Super Bowl? So it's not just the game started, the games played. It's how all these injuries affect them. So, I mean, take Deshaun Watson. I think this time off and these injuries, I mean, when I see Deshaun Watson, I see – a guy who freaking reminds me of a small linebacker versus the sleek, sinewy. Is that how you say it? Sinewy build he had with the Texans. So I'm like, wondering, is he done? He looks done to me. I'm not saying he is, but these injuries affect these quarterbacks in ways that we just can't understand. People don't understand getting hit at 30 miles an hour over and over and over.
Oh, yeah.
And on the joints, on the knees, the head, you know, it affects him. Yeah.
It's whiplash. I mean, you're constantly getting whiplash. It's like a car accident, honestly, multiple times, you know, a day, you know, getting the car accident. That's what these hits happen over time. That's how CTE develops, is these constant hits over and over again. Not necessarily right to the head, but just the movement like this, you know, can create some issues in the brain. So
the whiplash effect.
Whiplash effect for sure. Yes. So
All right. I'm with you, Eddie. I'm with you. And I apologize to you, Eddie, and the audience if you're noticing me kind of pushing forward. We're trying to stay on time. So let's move on over to the NFL rankings.
Sure.
First of all, I just want to talk about the Chiefs briefly and get your take. Look, the Chiefs have been under the radar. They look human. They're looking this. They're looking that. Look, Patrick Mahomes came in with a killer game. Over 400 passing yards, and I think this was a bit of a statement game against the Chargers. The Chargers know who they are. They understand the nuances of them, and they were able to shut them down. It wasn't even a contest, and I think the Chiefs are the dominant team in the league right now. They lost the first game, and they've been building, and they're starting to come out of their shell. I'm not a Travis Kelce fan. I'm not a Taylor Swift fan, but those guys look scary, Eddie, that combo there. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, yeah, because, you know, their offense hasn't really been in sync. If Travis Kelce is covered well, that offense isn't going to move. Their running back situation is hit and miss. I mean, Isaiah Pacheco has been doing pretty good. Jerick McKinnon is kind of like a third down back. He has his moments as well. But if they don't have, you know, Travis Kelce having a big game, they can't move the ball offensively. So, you know, they need another wide receiver to step up. And, you know, they brought back Mecole Hardman, you know, so we'll see if that helps. You know, the Rashee Rice has definitely helped. The rookie, he's definitely emerged here and there. But the other guys, you know, Marcus Valdes-Scantling, I mean, they, where is that guy, right? You know, they struggled offensively in the first 5 or 6 weeks, and yet they're still, you know, 6-1. And yet, you know, why? It's because their defense actually had been carrying that team. Their defense has always been the liability. And now this year, it's become a strength. They're actually a pretty good defense right now, and they're showing it. And that's why they're right where they're at. And with that defense coming around and the offense starting to get some rhythm, yeah, they could be a daunting force moving forward for anybody to stop.
Right. Hey, okay. I had the Eagles at number two. I didn't like how they won. I thought the refs gift wrapped in the game this last night, but they were the better team you could see on the field. And here's where you may find it a bit controversial. After the beatdown, the embarrassment that the Ravens gave the Detroit Lions, a team on the verge of entering the circle of eliteness, I bumped them up to number three because I think what's scary is this could be the beginning of that offense finally getting it together. The big thing here, Eddie, with this team that they proved Sunday, touchdowns. Before this past weekend, it was Justin Tucker carrying them, and they were allowing teams to hang around because they were having red zone efficiency problems. To me, that's a product of a new offense, chemistry, timing, etc. And we finally saw that. So I bumped them up to number three with their 5-2 record, which is the same as the 49ers. So give me your take on what I said about Baltimore, then just jump into with what happened to the Niners.
Well, Baltimore did show me something this last week. I mean, it is a week-to-week thing, right? The rankings can sway drastically based on one win, right?
In my opinion,
I mean, it's a pretty big move, but in my opinion, my Niners are still number three, but you know, I'm biased. I'm San Francisco right through and through. Yeah, they had a poor showing tonight. Their defense just did not show up tonight. And you know, give credit to the Vikings. They played well. And you know, one of my buddies called me up and said, hey, you know, he's a Dallas Cowboy fan. He's like, oh, you know, the blueprint's been made out by the Cleveland Browns. Watch out. You know, now the Niners, you know, going to look mediocre on offense. The offense wasn't the issue. It was the defense. The defense could not stop the Kirk Cousins led Vikings. I mean, Kirk Cousins threw over 400 yards.
Whoa. I would normally buy that, except for the fact that the team put up 30 points for three straight weeks. So that offense, now the defense, what I'm saying is the offense has to be able to, that defense has carried this, has been playing dominant too. But I don't put that whole blame. This offense is stinking right now. They average 30 points a week. My issue with them is depth. If you lose
McCaffrey, you're talking about the Niners.
Yeah. If they lose McCaffrey or Debo, what I'm seeing is a team that's done, that hasn't found a solution without those two players. Look, that team runs through McCaffrey, and he was kind of shut down tonight. And Debo helped stretch that offense. He's so spectacular as a player. He can rush the ball, make plays. I mean, he's a playmaker. So, for example, the reason I moved the Baltimore Ravens ahead of them is because of that. Baltimore Ravens, they lost their running attack. They replaced it.
J.K. Dobbins,
Yeah. That offense is opening up with no name receivers. And then I look at the Niners, I'm like, you lose McCaffrey, you lose Debo, you're done. I mean, I'm not saying I'm right. What I'm saying, that's what I saw the last 2 weeks.
But Baltimore Ravens have Gus Edwards, and Gus Edwards had a really good game, and he's been with the team for a long time, and he's actually a decent back, you know. So if they lose J.K. Dobbins, they have a Gus Edwards who can fill in and do pretty decent. They don't have the same thing with the San Francisco Niners. They don't have somebody to replace Christian McCaffrey. I mean, they have Jordan Mason. They have Eli Mitchell, who's always hurt. So it's tougher to fill it in, you know.
But that's my point. That's my whole point. And that's on general management. Maybe they shouldn't have agreed. Maybe they should have, when they reworked McCaffrey's contract, maybe he reworked it not to give him as much so they could put in a little money. So, for example, when I saw the article a couple of days ago that the Titans may be looking to trade Derrick Henry, actually, I thought of the Niners. I'm like, they could use him. You know? They could really use him. I don't want to, you know, because
they may not want to pay him, though.
Well, and that's my point. They're overpaying McCaffrey. Look, at the end of the day, I love McCaffrey. He's dynamic, more dynamic than Henry. But who do I trust to be on the field more, better? It's Henry, not by much, because he's had his own sense of injuries. But the guy is a train. So I'm hoping he's going to make a trade for him. You know, but my point is I see chinks in the armor of the Niners, and these are big holes, because if they lose these guys, they haven't shown the resiliency. It's only two games, but in the past 2 weeks, they haven't shown the resiliency nor ability to overcome that. That's all my take. I'm actually rooting for the Niners. I'd like to see Kyle Shanahan overcome his demons of being a moron in big games.
Right.
Moving on. Elitism is on the radar. The Jaguars at number 5. The Dolphins at number 6. The Lions at number 7. I kind of wanted to talk about those two teams, but the Dolphins are the Dolphins. They're going to bounce back. The rest hurt them. You know, let's wait and see. But they got to start beating winning teams. You know, they're competitive, so I'm not too concerned. Now, the Lions, all I want to point out about the Lions after the shellac, I mean, that was an embarrassment. That was like a Super Bowl champ team playing a college team. But the Lions are going to bounce back. But there's an important point here with the NFC. And I heard it from my man, Chris Berman, last night. I love primetime. That is the only ESPN show I watch. It's primetime. And the only reason I'm able to watch it is because Hulu forced ESPN Plus on me. I didn't have a choice. Well, you're getting ESPN Plus and Disney Plus, and we're going to charge you $5 more a month. So I didn't have a choice. I had the Hulu Live package, which is similar to cable TV, where you get all the live shows at the same time. But anyway, my point is he brought up a very good point. He says these NFC East teams, they suck against physical AFC teams. And he goes, and I agree, and after he pointed it out, I'm like, yeah. So he brought up a good point. This is a great loss for the Lions to go back. It's like, because they're a rising team, a young rising team. Sometimes I think it's good to get smashed in the mouth by a perennial power to show you ain't there yet, boy, you know, just to make that statement. So I think the Lions will recover. Any thoughts on the Dolphins and Lions before we move on?
No, you know, I would say that the way you ranked them, you know, Jacksonville being number 5, I think is a little questionable to me, but I probably would have put Miami there and then put Jacksonville at number 6. But hey, this is your rankings and I'm just giving you my 2 cents. But, I think Miami has played better opponents. Jacksonville is still, you know, you play with who's in front of you, right? And if you're winning, you're winning. They're both 5-2. I just think the Dolphins are a more explosive team and a better team overall. And that's why I would put them at number 5 instead of Jacksonville.
No, they are. You can switch these around. It's like, I'm not going to argue with you saying maybe Miami should have been there. Jacksonville's been winning. Miami has lost, 2 critical games, and the blueprint is starting to show up and how to handle that team. And the other thing with Miami is they get a lot of hype. They haven't beaten a team like above 500. And I wish I had saved that article, but there was something to that effect. So, you know, being flashy gets a lot of hype and attention. You know, everybody loves that guy, that John Travolta scene walking down, you know. But that's all flash. So, and the Jaguars, they've been improving every week. And they have the elite talent. My concern with the Jaguars is actually Trevor Lawrence taking that final step, you know. But, okay, so moving on, though. Like I said, it was Jaguars, Dolphins, and the Lions. And now the better than average but still has kinks to work out department, I dropped the Bills from number 6 to number 9. And they have problems. It looks like they still have jet lag from going over the pond. And at the end of the day, I've never been impressed with their head coach, and their defensive coordinator has never impressed me neither. But this, to me, isn't the play calling or coaching. The players are in a funk. And I think it's Josh Allen needs to step up and become a veteran team leader. He still acts like a child at times with his mannerisms and things like that. Somebody in that locker room needs to step up as a leader. And Josh Allen is the heart and soul of that team. I think they're going to figure things out, but they are very beatable any given Sunday for all the talent they have. And actually, that's the other team I was thinking. I was like, y'all need Derrick Henry. You know, y'all need a rushing attack.
They need a rushing attack because, you know, James Cook hasn't really shown up yet. I mean, the guy's got a lot of talent. Honestly, he's disappointed me from a fantasy football perspective because he was a guy I was eyeing because, you know, he was going to be the every down back. You know, Devin Singletary's no longer there, and I thought he'd be the guy that would just carry the load and do a good job, and he hasn't shown it yet. And I don't know if it's necessarily his fault. I don't know if it's the offensive blocking schemes. I don't know. It's or if it's the game call, you know, the play calling. The Buffalo Bills' success completely hinges on Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. And exactly. Right now, that's it. If you can shut that down, they're going to have a problem moving the ball. And that's exactly what they're coming. You know, you have now Dawson Knox, who now is out, you know, for, you know, a couple of weeks now. Now Dalton Kincaid has to step up, and he's a rookie tight end. And, you know, they have Gabriel Davis as the other guy on the other end. He's a good wide receiver. And,
yeah,
you know,
he's been playing well.
Better. They should be better than they've been showing. I mean, their defense has been suspect too. So I don't know what's going on. It might be that layover, that hangover from the 2 weeks out in London, you know, but it didn't bother Jacksonville. The same thing happened to Jacksonville. I don't know.
I just think they're an overrated team right now because of what you just said. You shut Allen or Diggs, they have no recourse. Kind of like what I'm saying with the Niners. Without McCaffrey and Debo, they're a completely different team. Even though Diggs and Allen are on the field, they're not in sync all the time. And it doesn't help when you have egos versus leaders. Stephon Diggs is one of these guys. He'll start whining to the press and all that. So they need to develop leadership. If you look at the Eagles, you look at the Niners, and oh God, what's the third team? The third team that's always in the mix. Eagles, Niners,
Chiefs.
They don't have that. I think that's one reason they let Tyreek Hill walk, the Chiefs. They didn't want that in the locker room where ego, whining, complaining, give me the ball. That disrupts teams. And I think with Diggs, I'm not saying he's a problem, but that's a concern for me based on what I've seen of Diggs. All righty. Moving on, my friend. Tell me what you think of the Cleveland Browns. Is Deshaun Watson, I'm not saying he's done. But the last, so far this season, he looks like a fat man who's done. He looks like he's lost a step. When I saw that interception where he got hurt, I actually did a double take because I was like, damn, didn't we see that play a couple weeks ago? That same interception, that same rollout, you know? So I'm not saying I'm right, but am I off here or am I just, maybe I need to give him more time? What's your take on that?
With the Browns? You know, I don't know. It could be an in-shape thing, you know, but even guys who are out of shape can throw the ball and be accurate. And, you know, so I don't know. I still think that there's something lingering with him, honestly, from all the offseason stuff. I think that mentally, I think he lost a lot of respect in the locker room a little bit. He's the highest paid guy, the only, you know, guy who's fully guaranteed in the NFL. And people are envious about that.
Kirk Cousins had a fully guaranteed contract. He was
but he's fully guaranteed and the highest paid. You know,
Kirk Cousins was like 85 million over the
top. Yeah, I mean, this guy's 200 something million plus. I mean, and he hasn't performed to it. So he's definitely feeling the pressure from, I think, his peers, you know, from the city of Cleveland. You know, they're dying to have a great football team. They know they have a great defense, although it didn't show it this weekend against the Indianapolis Colts with Gardner Minshew, the porn star, throwing, you know, over 300 yards. I mean, that Cleveland Brown team should be way better. But, of course, they lost Nick Chubb. And now they lost Jerome Ford, right? So now
they lost Jerome Ford
for a couple weeks. So Kareem Hunt is now the running back. And we're going to get to the waiver wire, but he's number one, obviously. But anyway, but they have a balanced attack. You know, the thing is P.J. Walker has been saving their season. honestly, because
and people are whining about that. They want the rookie in there. I'm like, are you people high? What the hell are you watching? So real quick though, on the fat man comment, you're dating yourself, because you're right. There were fat people who could play in the NFL when we were kids. The only fat people you see is some bellies on the offensive and defensive linemen. But the NFL is a different game now.
We can't say fat. That's a PC incorrect term now. We got to say overweight or over, you know, maybe with a plus size plus people. Whatever, right?
I got the fat gene. If I don't watch what I eat, I see pictures of my aunt, my mother, and I'm like, oh dear God, I got their genes, and I call it the fat gene. And look, COVID killed fat people, so I'm sick of this fat shaming because we're putting politics before actual health. Look, if somebody's as big as a house, maybe I'm not going to go to their face, look, you fat pig. But I will say, hey, look, brother, I'm concerned about your weight. You know,
for sure.
At the end of the day, we're just being polite because we love them, we like them, etc. But the down and dirty, it's not healthy to be fat. But we're digressing.
I just want to correct myself because I didn't use the right term. It's the first term, and I just want to say for those people looking out there, it's, you know, body plus people. That's it.
Oh, my God. What happened to you? No, I'm kidding. You're right.
Hey, we have to be conscious of our audience, right? Right? You know, not everybody is going to be exactly what we view and what we say, because we grew up in a different era. Not everybody's listening to us are from our era. So,
but I will say this about men and women. We're talking more about women in the sense of how to – most men, there was a Playboy cartoon I saw, or Hustler, or maybe one of those type things when I was in the Navy. I shouldn't sit there and say that, but it was one of those watching ones. But what I got out of this cartoon, it was hilarious. It was a two-panel cartoon, Eddie. They showed from the mirror aspect. It was titled How Men See Themselves, and you saw this Greek Adonis. Then the next panel was kind of like the back shot, and you can see this fat blob. That's how guys are. They're like, I look good. How many times do we see that fat slob with the hot-looking women? And we're like, damn. There's one of three things that guy has.
Yeah, he's rich. He's rich.
Rich? You know, maybe he's got something under the belt. Or he's got personality, you know? Those are the three options, you know? Yep. But at the end of the day, before we move on the fat shaming, you're right, we shouldn't fat shame. But I am proud of the fact Reginitas are in. The curvy woman is in. You know, when I was in high school, you know, my friends would go, man, look at that chick. She's hot. She's hot. I'm like, yeah. And in the back of my head, man, that woman, looks like girl looks like a 12-year-old boy. Then I'd be looking at the Latinas and the black chicks with the curves. And yeah, man, look at that big old butt. Look at those. Look how fast she is. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? That's a hot-looking woman there. Peer pressure got to me, brother. So I am happy for women in that sense. You know, but let's stop digressing. Let's move on. Look, the Steelers are improving. We saw this week, even though the refs sealed the victory for them, Mike Tomlin teams have a history of getting better as the season goes along. And I just wanted to point that out. They had the bye week. Kenny Pickett looked good because he did not throw a pick. His timing seemed to be there. So look for the Steelers over the next few weeks to see how they do, because that's arguably the best division in football now. The Ravens, the Steelers, the Bengals.
Right. The one team and the Browns.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so and that's a physical division. That's one reason I think that division, you know, doesn't get to the Super Bowl as much. They're just so beat up from each other, you know. Any thoughts on Steelers?
You know, I'm very impressed with how they turned their season around, because after the first 2 to 3 weeks, everybody was questioning, like, oh my God, is Mike Tomlin going to be able to write this ship? Because, you know, he's a really good coach, really good motivator. But it looked very dire, you know, after the first 2 to 3 weeks. And then they just kept at it. I mean, they played Steeler football, great defense, you know, they're not having a running game, unfortunately. Najee Harris, you know, and Jalen, what's his name? Jalen.
Wormley or something?
Jalen, I forgot his name. Anyway, Jalen Harris, I forgot his name. Anyway, so the other guy, the backup running back, he's been, you know, a receiving guy. But, you know, their defense essentially keeps them in games. And I think that's, you know, and of course Tomlin knows how to motivate his team. So I think that team, you know, is dangerous because, you know, Kenny Pickett is getting better. George Pickens is getting better and better. So, you know, that team is going to be dangerous moving forward. And it's already showing with their 4-2 record.
I agree. So for the audience, the better than average but still has kinks to work out was number 9 with Buffaloes, who dropped 3 slots, and the Browns came in at 10. They remained the same. And then the pretenders or contenders tier includes the Seahawks at number 12, the Jets at 13, and the Steelers at 14, having moved up from 18. Just a couple of seconds here. What are your thoughts on the Vikings? Do you think they're turning the corner here based off this game tonight? Yes. Give me your thoughts. I moved them up from 21 to 15.
I mean, they had Jordan Addison, T.J. Hawkinson. They have this other receiver who, hasn't really played that much. And he had a really good – I just can't remember his name off the top of my head. But he was another a wide receiver that had a really good game. And they did all this without Justin Jefferson.
I think, who you're referring to.
No, it's another wide receiver. It was another guy. Okay, I forgot his name. The name escapes me. But anyway, so Justin Jefferson, is out 4 weeks, and their defense played well. Their offensive line was ridiculous. I was like, man, this team shows up at home. I mean, they hadn't been winning at home.
They had no offensive line. So what do you say about the Niners?
Right, that's my point. It's like this Niner defense was, Nick Bosa, Javon Hargrave, they have Eric Armstead. Now they had Randall Gregory. It's like they're supposed to be, and of course, Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw. I mean, they have really good talent on that defensive side, and they should be way better. They should have had at least one sack. They had pressures, but that showed me that their offensive line did a really good job in blocking the scheme of the 49ers. And either it was a bad defensive scheme or a great offensive line. Either way, the Vikings, I think, are a better team than people think right now. And they're doing this without Justin Jefferson. And I think they've righted the ship. This is a momentum-changing game for them for the season. And I think we'll see next week what happens.
In hearing you talk, it made me realize that in life, the first time I ever heard it was from Sylvester Stallone, but it's been said by many people well before him that are famous as well, that it's not about how successful you are in life. It's about how you react when you get punched in the face and knocked down. It's right. How you get up and respond. And I think that's where the Niners are at right now. I know I'm backtracking, but I think it's a pretty good point. I think the Niners got smashed in the mouth. And they're not reacting to it very well, as we saw in the Vikings game. So they've got to overcome their own issues within themselves, because there's no excuse for them losing tonight. All right.
So I just want to point out something that you just said, just to kind of support what you just said about that. So when I got into sales, I was an engineer, and I did that for a couple of years before going into sales.
That's right. You're an engineer.
Engineering is a very black and white world. There's no gray. And I went into sales, and let me tell you, it's all gray, right? And it was a hard thing for me to transition from. And one of the managers saw me struggling with, the way sales is. And I was kind of taking things personally, didn't have a really thick skin at first. And over time, my skin got thicker. But this manager pointed out and said this one thing that always stuck with me. And he said, Eddie, just remember this. Life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you deal with it. And I think that applies right now with the 49ers. They've been hit in the mouth by the Cleveland Browns. Now they have to step up and show that they are the team who we all thought they were. They just have to get back mentally who they are.
Exactly. Eddie, you're thumping on something. I think they make a point, but it's reverberating as an echo. This is an FYI.
It's reverberating?
Oh, you were probably close to your mic, I bet.
Maybe.
But no, I agree with you. And that is true. And what Eddie just said, the final point is, our point, it's not sports. Our point is life. It doesn't matter where in life you are. We're always going to get knocked down. We're always going to be slapped with embarrassment, with demotions, loss, firings, getting beat up, all that. It's how we react, which helps determine our success. All righty. So that tier was the rest of the best or pretenders. We had the Vikings at 15 that moved up from 21. The Rams dropped to 17 from 14. The Chargers dropped from 15 to 18. And I'm just going to make one comment on the Chargers. For those not aware, and I've said it before, the Chargers have a tradition of not being able to win, of always looking Super Bowl worthy on paper and never coming through. And what's aggravating about this is they paid a quarterback with phenomenal talent but has never won anything and has never shown he could put a team on his back, at least on the professional level. And they're paying Justin Herbert $260 million plus, for 5 years. Well, maybe not 5 years, but $260 million. You know, and I'm like, there was somebody said the comment, like, there's a lot of overpaid junk quarterbacks. And that's what he's referring to. He's not referring to their talent, or he's not saying they can't make tough throws. He's saying they can't win.
Right.
Well, Joe Burrow is the next one on that list, meaning he's taking the team to the Super Bowl, but he's entering those years now where, well, can he win the big one? Can he carry the team? I actually think Zach Taylor, the head coach, is terrible, and I think Burroughs makes him look good. But either way, I just want to say that about the Chargers. The get it together or else overachiever section. I just have one comment with Atlanta Falcons. They're not a very good team, but they have a half game lead in the NFC South. That division is up for grabs, and a mediocre team is going to win. But I want to say this about Desmond Ridder. I'm rooting for him. He's the quarterback for the Falcons. But, man, he is his own worst enemy with the turnovers. I mean, he's like Gardner Minshew, you know, because Gardner Minshew, for people who aren't aware, had 4 turnovers, 3 fumbles, and 1 interception. So he didn't help his team, even though the refs cost him. He didn't help. But I just want to say that about the Falcons. They're an up-and-coming team. And this is why they need to stick with Ridder, because it doesn't matter. From a morale standpoint, winning that division, whether it's a soft division or not, is huge in not only in individual players' growth like Ridder, but the team and their psyche moving forward. Your quick thoughts on Atlanta?
No, I'm impressed that they are at the point where they're at. I mean, they should be worse than their record, but they're sticking around. And, you know, kudos to them. And even Bijan Robinson really hasn't really done anything.
He didn't play in the second half.
No, I'm just saying in general, he really hasn't done anything for being this highly touted running back from Texas. He just hasn't really showed, you know, this force that he was supposed to be. I mean, a lot of people in fantasy football drafts had him as a top 4 pick. And right. If you did that, you're hurting because he hasn't really done anything, you know. Then Drake London is another one. He's actually been emerging here and there. But that team's scrappy. I got to give it up to them. They're scrappy.
I agree. And at the end of the day, these running backs, I think they're, unless you're Derrick Henry, it takes time because these offenses, you better learn how to catch the ball. Better be able to run those end routes. Better be able to do the little toss off to the receiver who's going to throw it. You know, all these, it's a much more complex game for the running back today. So I'm willing to give him time.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay Bucks, I want to say they're kind of like, even though they lost to the Falcons, they're kind of like one level higher. They're a team with a new quarterback in Mayfield, learning mm-hmm. chemistry. But for both these teams, I'm not impressed with their coaching staff. Todd Bowles is just an atrocious head coaching record, and this Arthur guy with the Falcons hasn't impressed me too much. But, hey, at least the Falcons yeah. guy is winning, you
yeah.
know.
Arthur Smith, yeah.
Yeah, and so that tier is the get it together or else overachievers. The Falcons at 19, up from 25. The Bucks at 20, down from 16. The Colts at 21. They didn't move up. They were at 23 before. It wasn't that they moved up. It's teams were dropping below them, you know. The Commanders at 22 from 19. They're just an inconsistent team with a terrible head coach. I've never been a Ron Rivera fan. And I actually have a friend who got mad at me because she's friends with him, you know. 23, the New Orleans Saints.
And he's the only Latino head coach in the NFL, so.
Yeah, yeah. That's how she met him. She knew him as a kid. His father was in the military. They were stationed together in Panama. So she's a big Ron fan. But the New Orleans Saints at 23 from 20. In a nutshell, Indianapolis, Washington, New Orleans, they're just too inconsistent. New players, learning new offenses. And out of those, that group, the Saints are the ones that are disappointing because they have an elite defense. But
right.
I think the Saints' problems lie with their offensive coordinator, Pete Carmichael. Yep. And I think he has to go. I don't think Derek Carr's got this perception, this reputation. But in his defense, he's learning chemistry with his receivers. He's learning a new playbook. He's trying to gel. Pete Carmichael has not done anything with that offense since Sean Payton left. What are your thoughts with the Saints?
Yeah, I mean, the Saints should be way better than they are. I mean, they have playmakers. They have Chris Olave. He's a great playmaker. They have Michael Thomas, who used to be a great, great playmaker. I mean, he's still good. And then you have Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara is a really good two-way running back. He can run. He can catch. And, you know, they also have Jimmy Graham, you know, so, you know, Derek
Jimmy
Carr.
Jimmy Graham
is a tight end. But, yeah. But yeah, so, but, you know, Derek Carr, you know, yeah, he's a veteran quarterback. He's still learning the system. It could be a play calling thing. They might be just being very conservative because they know they have a good defense. and you know they're still hanging around in games. They're not getting blown out. They're good enough to compete against some of the good teams, but they definitely have to shore up their offense more. I agree.
And the final one, we're running a couple minutes behind, so I'll make this quick. The Packers just aren't very good, but neither was Brett Favre's first year, and neither was Aaron Rodgers. To me, this is a building year to develop him as a leader, to develop him with chemistry. I think they still need a receiver to help him out, but I'm viewing this year as a lost season for them, and I have them ranked at 30th. They're down from 26. In fact, this tier, real quick, before I get your final comments on this, this is what the hell we have no clue or playing for draft position. The Titans, the Patriots were 25 up from 30 because they did beat the Bills. The Broncos at 26 up from 29 last week. They won. The Giants up to 27 from 28, they won. The Bears, up 28 from 31, they won. All these 1-5 teams or 1-6 teams won. The Raiders dropped from 22 to 29. I can't remember where I read it, but they were like the writer said they're the worst 3-3 team in the league. I'm like, yeah, that's true. And they showed
I agree.
And then the Packers dropped from 26 to 30th, and the Cardinals dropped to 31 from 27, and the Panthers stayed, at 32, and they had the bye week. What's your take on the Packers before we close out the rankings?
You know, they're in rebuild. I mean, let's face it. We know that they're in rebuild. I mean, Jordan Love is, you know, he's been under, you know, the tutelage of Aaron Rodgers over the last 4 years or right around that time frame. And, you know, he's definitely come into a system that he understands. The thing is that, you know, the AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones has been injured, you know, since week one off and on. He just came back this week and they need him. They need an Aaron Jones to make that offense function because Jordan Love on his own isn't going to be able to carry him yet. He could be in the future, but not yet. You know, then you have, you know, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs. They're emerging receivers and they're decent. You know, I wouldn't say that they're elite, but they're decent. But, you know, they need a running game to balance things out so that not all of it is falling on Jordan Love. Because Jordan Love still needs experience, and he's getting that experience this year. So it's a rebuild year for the Green Bay Packers.
My final comment on that is my issues with all these West Coast surrogates, or, you know, they have learned the West Coast offense. And they've all changed them up, and they've expanded it. But a lot of teams like the Packers over the years, the Zach Taylor with the Bengals, they don't use the running back. And the running back is a key position in the West Coast offense with screens, short dump offs. That's
sure.
how you don't run them up the gut. You use those little tight plays. And the Packers have been notorious for not implementing that style play. And I think that's why you see a lot of these West Coast teams eventually falter and lose. You got to have a well-balanced offense because, as we said, if you shut down – Josh Allen, you're shutting down Stephon Diggs by default. But when your team only has that and there's no threat from the rushing attack,
you know,
you're going to lose. Anyway, that's what we have for our NFL Week 8 Power Rankings. So let us know if you agree or disagree. But right now with our final segment, it is the Eddie Show. Eddie, talk to me about the fantasy waiver wire, and let's get it going with the quarterback. Actually, Eddie, it's your segment here. Just started off, who are the top players that people need to look out for?
So a lot of these names we've already mentioned in past podcasts just because it's, you know, the running back position, and the running back position is always hurt. And, you know, the latest to enter the injury report is, Jerome Ford of the Cleveland Browns. They already lost Nick Chubb. Now they lost Jerome Ford. It looks like maybe 1 to 2 to 3 weeks. So the guys that you should target, we've already mentioned Kareem Hunt. He's definitely one that you should target for this week. He's probably on other people's rosters because people already anticipated that, you know, he was on the team when he got picked up, and brought on the team. But then you have this Pierre Strong. You know, you have an insurance policy. You need to have an insurance policy for these Cleveland running backs because they're falling off the wall like flies. And, you know, so Pierre Strong is the insurance policy on Nick Chubb. So he's got it that you want to target for the Cleveland Browns. Dante Foreman was one that we brought up last week or a couple weeks. The last podcast we mentioned that, you know, Khalil Herbert is out. Roshan Johnson is out. So, you know, Dante Foreman is someone that you definitely want to target. And he's definitely he scored good points, 33 points this weekend. So if you had targeted him and put him on your squad last week, you did well. Chuba Hubbard is another one that we have talked about for the Carolina Panthers. He's probably rostered by somebody, you know, but he's definitely somebody that you should target. Now the Rams, you know, had lost Kyren Williams, and you know there was speculation that there was, you know, Zach Evans. A lot of the people that were writing about fantasy were talking about Zach Evans as the guy, and to everybody's surprise, Daryl Henderson is the guy who emerged as the guy to target. So Daryl Henderson is definitely somebody that you want to target for the Los Angeles Rams. Royce Freeman is the insurance policy on Daryl Henderson, because you know these guys are falling down like flies, you know, falling off the walls like flies. So Royce Freeman is the insurance policy of Daryl Henderson on the Rams. Zeke Elliott has actually been scoring double digit points in the last 3 weeks for the New England. Yeah, so New England Patriots. So, you know, the Ramondre Stevenson is definitely their one, but, you know, even with him, you know, Ezekiel Elliott is getting his carries and touches. So he's got to target for Rabel Wire. Amari De Mercado.
De Mercado,
from the market. He's from the Arizona.
From the market, right?
So he's somebody that you could target on the Cardinals. He's somebody we talked about in the last podcast, so definitely he's probably already been taken, since if you listen to this podcast already, he's already probably on somebody's team. But, you know, it's going to be a running back kind of by committee with the Arizona Cardinals, because they also have Keontae Ingram and Damian Williams in there as well. So we already talked about Devin Singletary. He left, you know, the Buffalo Bills to go to the Houston Texans, and he's a guy that, you know, is definitely somebody that is helping Damian Pierce kind of find his ground, because Damian Pierce has been horrible. I mean, he's averaging like 2.9 yards per carry, and that guy was a really good running back last year. So Devin Singletary, I think, you know, has definitely emerged on that team as somebody who's, you know, helping out Damian Pierce's workload, and I think that's going to maybe keep Damian Pierce a little bit more fresh. So he's somebody you want to target. And then, of course, we mentioned Bijan Robinson. He's definitely been a disappointment on the Atlanta Falcons. You definitely want to target Tyler Allgeier. So he's somebody to take. For the quarterbacks, Derek Carr. I mean, we haven't talked about him yet, but Derek Carr, he's probably been rostered by somebody, but, you know, he's probably going to be a late pick, you know, in somebody's draft, but somebody may have dropped him because he really hasn't been doing that great. But if you're in desperate need for a quarterback, Derek Carr is not a bad guy. I mean, we've talked about some of his weapons already, Chris Olave, Alvin Kamara, and, you know, Jimmy Graham and Michael Thomas. I mean, he's got playmakers there. They're going to figure it out eventually, hopefully, right? But, you know, Derek Carr is definitely someone to plug in. Kenny Pickett for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's actually been doing decently in the last couple of weeks as well. I mean, his first few weeks have been kind of not initially something to write home mom about, but, you know, his mom will listen, but not everybody else. And, you know, he's emerging for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Gets you maybe 10 to 12 to 13 points a week. It's not going to just blow you out of the water, but it's not going to get you 0 points. So, we talked about Bryce Young in the past and Gardner Minshew in the past. Those are guys for the quarterbacks that you want to target. For the wide receivers, Rashee Rice for the Kansas City Chiefs. We talked about if Travis Kelce's getting shut down, who's going to emerge? Rashee Rice has emerged for the Kansas City Chiefs. And now they brought Mecole Hardman. So we'll see how that balances things out moving forward for Rashee Rice. But as a rookie, he's actually done pretty well. And the one rookie who's really killing it is Josh Downs. Josh Downs for the Indianapolis Colts. Oh, my God. I mean, I got killed last week on my fantasy league. And I was going up against Josh Downs. I mean, like, these are not like wholesale names, right? We're talking about Josh Downs, you know, the Kendrick Bourne. You know, I got
the brutal loss. The brutal loss.
Yeah, exactly. I lost these no names, right?
Yeah.
Right. And Kendrick Bourne is one that we're targeting for, you know, that's next on the list after Josh Downs. But both those guys had great, you know, great weeks. And Kendrick Bourne is the wide receiver one now in New England. Now, New England's offense is pretty anemic. So this is only if you're desperate. Go ahead and target Kendrick Bourne, but more than likely, he's actually probably on somebody's roster. And then Jaden Reed for the Green Bay Packers is somebody that we have talked about probably in our first podcast when we first started this, before the season started, that Jaden Reed in the preseason looked pretty good. He's probably rostered, but if you're desperate, go ahead and go out and get him if he's still available or trade for him. From the tight end, there's only maybe a couple that I'll point out. Dalton Kincaid. We know that Dawson Knox for the Bills got hurt. Dalton Kincaid is the rookie. And, you know, they do look for the tight ends in the red zone. So that's definitely somebody you want to target. And then the last one that I will say is Taysom Hill for the New Orleans Saints. He's He's a triple threat guy. He can receive. He can pass. He can, you know, he can catch, you know, run. I mean, he does it all. So, you know, and the thing is, you know, he's involved in that offense. So definitely keep an eye on Taysom Hill. And that wraps up my waiver wires for the week.
And people, look, when Eddie gives you this, he's not giving you superstars that are going to put you over the edge. He's giving you bodies you need because you're missing players because of the bye weeks, because of injuries. He's making sure you stay competitive. So don't come back next week and say, Eddie, that guy only scored 12 points. When you're looking at that player before, he's only scoring 6. Eddie did his job. You just got to draft better, people. And there you have it. That's our podcast for the evening. Thank you so much for showing up. And finally, before we let you go, do not forget you can check out this podcast and other podcasts at sportsgrumblings.com. That will soon be grumblingsmedia.com. You can find Points on the Board, Fired Up, Free for All, and Big Questions with Big John. You can also find us on your favorite platforms. Do you want to watch us? YouTube and Rumble. Look up Grumblings Media as a profile name and the traditional routes as well. Apple, Google, Spotify, and Pandora. And as always, please do not forget to share, as that is how we will grow. So to everybody, thank you for watching. Eddie, thank you for joining us as you do every week. And until next time, people, y'all have a wonderful evening. Good night.